Now we're holding on page Zion in Bavakama, Os Tes Zion. We want to spend some time dealing with the question of, so now, let's say, for example, a person's animal went and ate some vegetables or whatever it is in somebody else's field. You can't just evaluate, now how do you evaluate the damage exactly to know how much they should pay? The vegetables or whatever it ate weren't ripe yet necessarily. So if they were ripe, it's different. But if they weren't ripe, you can't evaluate their actual value. They don't really have a full value yet. On the other hand, you can't say, for example, let's say that, we're going to take the plot of land that it's in and see how much less it might be worth because those few vegetables were eaten, and that might not make a difference at all. A person is realistically not going to pay a lot less for a plot of land with every single possible vegetable in it versus a few of them that are missing. So the Gemara spends some time discussing how we do it exactly. The Gemara says basically what you do is bishishim. You evaluate it against 60 times as much. And the Gemara brings a few different opinions. How we do it exactly, is it a two-part thing, is it a one-part thing, whatever the case, the bottom line is basically you're doing some kind of evaluation to figure out how much less is this particular area worth now because of the damage, but on the other hand, not just that area by itself, because that'll make the damage either undervalued or overvalued, but rather how it would be comparable to other plots of land of the same size. So the Gemara tells the following story. Elazar, or Eliezer Ze'ira, have a Saim Sani Uchmi. Eliezer, or Elazar, the younger, Ze'ira is the younger, or the little, or whatever, that was his name, have a Messiah Messani Uchmi. He was wearing black shoes. Now, in those times, to wear black shoes was a sign of Avelus. Now, Tosfos points out that we find from other Gemaras that Jews generally did wear black shoes. So the vote is, Tosfos says, most people would wear black shoes with white laces. Here, this guy, this Eliezer Ze'ira, was wearing black shoes with black laces. There are other explanations as well. There's an explanation, I think, from the Meiri that most people would wear glossy black shoes and his were dull black. Whatever the case, it was a sign of Avelus. V'hava ozel over koi b'shukah d'nahaudah. He was walking, as one girsa, or he was standing, as the other girsa, b'shukah d'nahaudah, in the marketplace of Nahaudah. Ashkechur d'bei reish galusa. People from the household of the reish galusa found him dressed in shoes like that. And they asked him, "Why are you wearing those kinds of shoes? Why are you wearing a sign of Avelus?" He answers them, "Because I'm mourning for Yerushalayim." This is a couple hundred years after the Churban. He's wearing this type of shoes, whether with black laces, whether with dull finish, whatever it is, as a sign of mourning for Yerushalayim. If we saw that, we would say, "Wow, what a tzaddik! He has such a mind." But they had a different mentality of the matter. So Omrulay, they told him, "At chashivasli sabuli Yerushalayim. Do you think you're such a chosh of a person that you should be showing public mourning for Yerushalayim like that? This kind of thing is gosover yuarohu." They thought this is an example of yuarohu, of showing off. And you have in halacha, a person is not supposed to be showing off his frumkeit in certain areas. So they figured he's doing something wrong. So they took him and put him in jail. You know, you talk nowadays, people talk in a mocking way, in a derogatory way, about the tzniyus police, let's say, for example, but here you literally have police whose job it is to go and enforce standards of how a yid should be behaving. And they see a yid who's acting in a way, who's dressing in a way that's not appropriate, that's yura, then they could put him in jail for it. So they thought that he's acting in a way of Yuara. Masha points out there are cases, for example, where the Gemara itself will argue whether Chayshin and LeYuara. Let's say, for example, you have a din, for example, that a chosin is technically potter from Krishna on the night he gets married and possibly for a couple of nights after that, but still, if he wants to say Krishna, then he's allowed to, and it's not considered Yuara, and the Gemara explains why. Lamaisa, what? We're holding on page Zion in Bava Kamma. Oh, he's Tess Zion. You have, the truth is nowadays, actually, the halacha is kind of the opposite. The original reason why a chassan is not supposed to say Kriya Shema is because he's tortured, because he's not going to be able to concentrate, because he's thinking about his wedding, he's thinking about his first time with his kala. But then you have a person wants to, a person feels with himself that he'll be able to, then fine, gezunt d'heit. It's not necessarily considered yuara. Nowadays, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch the other way around. If a chassan were not to say Kriya Shema under those conditions, that would be a sign of yuara. That would be like saying all the time, I'm always so careful to have kavana and Kriya Shema that this time I can't. Be that as it may, anyway, the point is that there you have an example where it could be yuara or not. Another example is, let's say, not working on Tisha B'Av. The Gemara mentions in Psachim that a person should not work on Tisha B'Av, and Talmud Chachamim should not be working on Tisha B'Av, and everybody should consider themselves in that regard like a Talmud Chacham. There also, it's not considered yuara because people see he's not working. Okay, he doesn't happen to have any work today. But here, unquestionably, the way that the Reish Galus's police saw it, this guy, this Eliezer Ze'ira, is publicly showing off his avelus for Yerushalayim, and therefore they considered that inappropriate and put him in jail for it. Amalahu, so he tells them, Gavra Rabbana, I'm a great person, meaning on the surface means I'm a Talmud Chacham. And therefore I have a right to be doing this kind of thing. Now, Marsha points out that, you have the story in Nedarim we had it a few months ago in Ein Yaakov, where Reb Tarfon was suspected by somebody of stealing from his crops, and the guy was going to throw him in the river, and Reb Tarfon said something that the guy realized from it, that he is the great tzaddik, the great Talmud Chacham, Reb Tarfon, and afterwards Reb Tarfon felt bad that he had saved himself by saying that he's a Talmud Chacham, that he saved himself with his Torah. What about this other Yezu Ze'ira? Why is he not bothered by that? Marsha says, listen, here, it's not a matter of saving himself. They're putting him in jail to find out what's the story. Is this guy Taka Talmud Chacham of the caliber who should be showing public mourning of Yerushalayim? Well, then in that case, they needed to know that, and he's telling it to them. Another point is as well, the Gemara says Reb Tarfon could have bought the guy off. Here, Eliezer Ze'ira doesn't have that ability. Ben Yehoyada says another point on it as well. When they say to him that you're showing yuara, what they're saying in effect is, why are you doing like that? Mistama, because you want people to honor you and say, look what a frum guy, look what a yore shemayim this is, that he's constantly so mourning about the korban. So he tells them, no, I'm a Talmud Chacham, I'm a gaber rabba, I don't need that kind of kavod, I have the kavod already. For that matter, he says, he used the word gavra rabba, which could equally well suggest, I'm a great person, it could equally well suggest that I'm honored because of my riches or whatever. It's not necessarily actually saying in so many words, I'm a Talmud Chacham. Anyway, Omru le Minoya Dinin, so they said, well, how do we know that that's so? Omru lehu, so he tells them, let's put it to the test. Oi atun bori minai milsa, either you ask me something in Torah, from anywhere in Torah, and you'll see whether I'm able to answer. Oi ano ivi minai ho milsa, or I'll ask you a question and let me see if I can stump you. Omru le boy at. So they told him, you ask the question. Omru lehu, so he asked them, hai man dekotz kufra. Suppose that one person went and chopped down kufra that belonged to somebody else. Kufra is unripe dates. So previously the Gemara had discussed in this whole matter of how you evaluate the damage, and in particular when it comes to a sage and grapes, for example, called boiser, again, the grapes are very unripe. They don't really have a value yet. So how exactly do you evaluate the value of the damage? So the Gemara had discussed that whole point. The Gemara had also mentioned, actually, certain cases in which the Beis Din of the Reish Galusa's estate was involved in judging such cases. So now Eliezer Ze'ira says to them in a similar vein, if somebody cuts off kufra, the unripe dates, from somebody else's palm tree, my mishalim, what does he pay? Omrulay. So they tell him, mishalim make kufra. He would have to pay the value of those unripe dates. So Eliezer Ze'ira says, wait a minute, Vahavu Tamri, what do you mean? You can't just make him pay only for the value of those unripe dates. They might be worth next to nothing. The fact is, if he had left them, eventually they would have probably grown into dates. Okay, they said, fine, you have a point. Ela Omrule Mishalom Zmei Tamra. Fine, so maybe you should have to pay the full value of dates. So he says to them, Omalahu Valab Tamri Shokol Mune, but the fact is he didn't cut off dates from the other guy. It was only unripe dates. So in other words, one way or the other, you don't seem to have it right. Omru lei emulon at, so they said, fine, we give up, fine, what do you have to say? What would you say the din would be in this case? Omru b'shishim, so he tells them this is one of those cases where you would evaluate it against 60. And again, he had a few different opinions in the Gemara. What that means before that, what it means exactly, but the bottom line is, in other words, you wouldn't just evaluate the value of the actual dates or unripe dates that he had damaged, but rather you would evaluate it relative to a bunch of other trees of that produce similar crops. Omrulay man omer kavasach. So they said to him, who says like you? You're saying that. How do we know that that is in fact the halacha? Omrulahu, so he tells them, Shmuel chai based in Ekayim. Shmuel, the Amora, is still alive. This is in Nauda, where Shmuel was a Rosh Hashiva. And his based in is still intact. So let us find out from him. Shadru kamei to Shmuel. They sent a message to Shmuel with the question, Omrulahu, and with what Eliezer Ze'ira had given the answer. Omrulahu, and Shmuel answered them, Shapir kamulahu b'shishim. What he told you was correct. You evaluated against 60 times as much. V'shavkua, so they left him alone. They realized now he really is. He's a Talmid Chacham, and he is worthy of walking around with these black shoes to mourn Yerushalayim. An interesting thing in this, the Yaris Dvash of Yonis and Ibishitz has a fascinating explanation of what was going on over here. In particular, why is it that this Eliezer Ze'ira is showing his mourning for Yerushalayim with shoes, Davka? There's many other ways that a person's dress or deportment or whatever that he could be showing mourning for Yerushalayim. So he says like this, in the times of the Beis Mikdash, so we know the Kohenim themselves had to do the Avodah barefoot. But Bechlal, a person is also not allowed to wear shoes on the Har HaBayis. So a person would be walking into the Beis Mikdash barefoot, or maybe in socks or slippers or whatever. The point is, their feet would be in fairly close contact with the ground. And it was almost like an electrical circuit. You know, you have to be grounded for the electricity to flow. So the same way, then a person did that. Now, when he went on Aliyah LeRegel, that gave him the ability to absorb so much Kedusha from the Beis Mikdash, so to speak, through his feet, that he could even reach levels of Nevuah. So now we don't have the Beis Mikdash, so in token of that, Eliezer Ze'ira was wearing shoes that show his availability for the Beis Mikdash. So when they tell him off for that, and they tell him, how could you do such a thing, in effect what they're telling him is, so you're saying, because we're not able to reach levels of Nevuah. But who says you're on the level, Bechlal, to be concerned about such a thing? Why, if you had been around in the time of the Beis Mikdash, would you have been one of those people who could possibly have reached that level, or to even know what that level means to even be concerned about it? So therefore, that's why they put him in jail. So then, when he read the whole question about the unripe dates and the evaluating 60 times as much, basically he explains the work is, even the time, so they, part of the question was also, fine, in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, we can understand, then the fact that the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed then is a terrible loss, because now Nevuah went away as a result of that. But in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, there was no Nevuah anyhow. So what's the big deal then, in effect, they're telling him. So he answers them with this business about Beshishim. But you still have, a person could still reach levels where they could have a semblance of Nevuah in a dream. And a dream, after all, the Gemara tells us, is 1/60th of Nevuah. Aloim lechem mishishim in Nevuah. So therefore, he's telling them we still have that loss that we lost from the time of the Beis Mikdash. At least a person who reaches those levels might not be able to reach actual Nevuah, but at least he'd be able to reach the level of a dream, which is a tiny semblance of Nevuah. Beshishim. And they realize that what he's saying is true, and he's taka of the level that he would have been able to reach such a thing had the Beis Mikdash been standing, and therefore he's right to be mourning with that, and he's right to be mourning that with his choice of shoes. But again, you know, one thing you see from the story as well is the way that they literally went and policed the behavior and the deportment of a yid. Where nowadays, again, you know, everybody kind of makes up their own chumras and kulos and whatever, and there's really no ein dorish vein mavakish, you know, to tell people you're doing right or you're doing wrong. But now we're seeing that back in the day, there were literally police who were looking over these things, what people are doing in the street, and putting them and even going so far as put them in jail if they see that a yid is not acting the way he's supposed to. Further on, the last couple of Mishnayos and the last couple of Dasim in the Perek talk about the dinim of Eish. A person sets a fire in his property and it spreads to somebody else's property. The Torah tells us he's responsible for the damage, and so the Mishnah and the Gemara deal with the various dinim in that regard. The actual pasuk that describes this av nezikin goes as follows: He seitze eish, if a fire breaks out, umotza koitzim, and it finds thorns, the nechal godish, and the stack of grain is consumed by the fire, oy hakoma, or the standing grain, oy hasodeh, or the field, shalom yishalom amaver sabera, then the one who started the fire has to pay for the damages. So the Gemara brings a drosha about it. Amr of Shmuel ben Achmi. The question is, in particular, a couple of the Mefoshim explain what's going to drive the drosha over here is a couple of things. First of all, why does the pasuk even have to mention that the first thing it found was thorns? The din would be the same thing, whether there were thorns there or not. Either way, Reuven sets a fire, it burns something of Shimon's, then Reuven is responsible. Why do we have to even mention the part about the thorns? Another point is why it starts with Umotza Kotzim, that it found thorns, and then Venech al Godish, and then the stack of grain was consumed, like in the passive sense, and then in the passive tense. So Amar Rav Shmuel Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonasan, En Puronos Ba'ala Olam Ela Bizman Shor Shoyim Ba'olam. Punishment represented by fire comes to the world only when there are Rishoyim in the world who are compared to thorns. Ve'en Maschelas Ela Min HaTzadikim Tchila. However, when the punishment begins, it begins first with the Tzadikim. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Ki Seitzei Eish or Motza Kotzim. Emasai Eish Yotza, when does a fire come out, a fire of destruction come out? Bizman Sha Eitzim or Sha Kotzim Matsurimla, when there are thorns that are available to it. So Umotza Kotzim, Meloshim, they're found, they're easily found, and Rishoyim are often compared to thorns. Doyachu Keish Kotzim, for example. So the same way, there's other psukim as well. So therefore, so the fire comes out, the fire is found, is easily found. Umotza, the fire is prevalent, because of them. Because it says, and the stack of grain was consumed. Meaning, now, the ochal godish lenema, it doesn't say in the active form that it eats, that it consumes the godish, which would imply first it burns the thorns, and then it burns the stack of grain, elo v'nechal godish. It says v'nechal, which is also past tense. V'nechal godish kvar, the stack of grain has already been consumed. Representing, in other words, that the tzaddikim end up bearing the brunt of the punishment first, as the Gemara will explain in a few lines why that is. The comparison is because the tzaddikim are like the tzaddikim sh'osim peiros, Marsha says. The tzaddikim produce fruit. They do mitzvahs, they do ma'asim tovim, they learn Torah, which produces fruit. So therefore, it's comparable to a stack of grain which nourishes people, which is actual fruit, as opposed to the thorns, which are basically useless except as firewood. So therefore, they can be compared to the pile of grain, and they end up getting consumed by the fire of punishment first. One point is, in other words, we're talking about, so one point is, especially when the tzaddikim don't do their job of giving musr to the rishayim, where you have the Gemara famously mentions in Shabbos, for example, that a person is able to be moicha in somebody else from doing an avera, and he doesn't, then he's also held responsible. So that's part of what we're saying over here. But the Gemara is going to go on to say another point as well, is that the tzaddikim don't live to have to see the tremendous punishment. Like this, they pass away before it really becomes bad. Now, there's a few different points in that regard. So this is hinted at in the phrasing of the pasuk about the way that the fire starts and it spreads. Tony Rav Yosef, so in this connection, Rav Yosef taught a braisa, my dichtiv atem lo say to ishmi pesach besoy ad boker. The pasuk says, by Makas Bechoros, Hashem says nobody should go out of the door of their house until morning. Why not? The reason is, famous expression, kivin shenitin rashus lamashchis, once the destroyer has given permission to destroy. Now, by Makas Bechoros, it was Hashem himself, anivolei malach, anivolei sorach, etc., like we say in the Haggadah. Nevertheless, when there is destruction going on, there are also malachi chabala, there are also destructive malachim that kind of come along for the ride. So they're the ones, when they're given rashus, einem mavchin ben tzaddikim l'rashoyim. He doesn't distinguish between tzaddikim and rashoyim, because when you have, like that, he's given permission to roam around and do whatever he wants, and the tzaddikim, Then he does indiscriminately. You have exceptional tzaddikim, the Gemara mentions in various other places. Tzaddikim gemurim are not subject to that, but most people, even most tzaddikim, are not on that level to have that special protection when kivin shen in rishus lamashvis. So therefore, everybody had to stay home that night. Not only that, Rabbi Yosef's Braisa continues, that again, the Puronus can sometimes begin with tzaddikim first. As we just said about the thorns and the grain. Shenemar, as we have a pasuk, v'ichrati mimech tzadik v'rosha. Hashem tells the Navi Yechezkel that I will cut off from among you tzadik and rosha. So therefore, the tzadik is mentioned first. Now, Marsha points out, I mean, you could say the reason it does that is because they have to say them in some order. You can't say the two words together. But if it meant that they happen equally, then it would have been tzadik im rosha. Like when Avram davens for the people of Sodom, Lahomas Tzadik, Hashem says, how could you do that? Lahomas Tzadik im Rosha. Tzadik v'Rosha would suggest that the Tzadik himself, that the Tzadik passed away before even the Rosha. Where it's noticeable still that he's a Tzadik. Maharsha Shaw also discusses over here, by the way, like this, Rashi mentions on Chumash, the reason why they had to stay home that night is because the nighttime is a time when destructive malachim roam around. Now, the fact is, it's only that night they have to stay indoors. We don't find that every night a person has to stay indoors. But Maharsha says that actually, yeah, the continuation of our Gemara is going to say the same thing, that it's true that when there's an epidemic going on, as there was by Makas Bechoris, then a person shouldn't go out because Kivin Shinitin Rishus. Then in addition, you also have the fact is Makas Bechoris happened only at Chatzos. Why couldn't they go out of their houses the rest of the night? That must be because in general, the night is a time for Mechablam, is a time for destructive Malachim. So it's both, really. Tosfos also goes over here, the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute, the idea that a person should leave during daylight and come in during daylight. Tosfos discusses, does that mean all the time, or does it mean dafka when a person is traveling from one city to another? Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef here taught a braisa that says again that when the destructive malachim and the destructive forces are given free rein, then the tzaddikim and the rishoyim get hit, and the tzaddikim even first. So the Gemara continues, Bochi Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef, when he learned that, cried, Hai nami la'ayin doimin. Does that mean that kulay hai la'nami la'ayin doimin? Does that mean to that extent even that the tzaddikim are considered like nothing, that they end up getting punished and removed even before the Rishoyim? So in other words, Mefoshim explained, up until this point, you know, when we had the previous Pesukim, Rabbi Yosef could have learned from that, fine, you know, the Tzaddikim's Ptira is maybe meant to be Mechaper for the Rishoyim, that way the Rishoyim don't end up getting punished. But here we're saying the Rishoyim do get punished after all. So then, in that case, then that's what Maharsha says, that Mela, if the tzaddik passes away, and then that he's considered a kapara for the generation, okay, then that's not so bad, then that's a good thing for the tzaddikim. But if you're saying the tzaddikim are going to get punished, and the rishoyim are still going to get punished as well, so the tzaddikim's passing is not even a kapara for the rishoyim, so then like, are they considered like nothing? Why do they end up why do they end up dying before the rishoyim? So Abaye says because actually it's a good for them that this way they don't have to see the tremendous evil that comes. This way they pass away before it gets really bad. The pasuk says the tzaddik is gathered in before the evil. So before the really bad situation comes, the tzaddik has passed away, so he doesn't have to see that. Well, so the point is this way it's a benefit for the tzaddik. He doesn't have to see things getting really really bad. He passes away at an early stage. What? Not Lemach, like what? Like Hanukkah, well, Hanukkah is something else, but yeah. What?
I didn't pay a single weapon.
No, we're saying that Tzaddik is going to... Tzaddik is passing away before the Rishoyim. When there's Puranus coming to the world, Hashem arranges that the Tzaddikim die first, and then later on the Rishoyim, so that the Tzaddikim don't have to see the full brunt of the... Yeah, that's...
He shouldn't see,
that he shouldn't have to see the tremendous evil that comes. He passes away before it becomes really, really bad, yeah. And what doesn't make any sense? I don't know.
Always has a will to live.
Of course, but when Hashem is going to... We're saying, when Hashem is going to bring a tremendous Puranus, then Hashem arranges that the Tzaddikim die before it, so that they don't have to see the full extent of it. This way, they pass away when things are still relatively calm and peaceful. No, nobody's saying... Okay, we're talking about a time of tremendous Puranus. We're not talking about the average situation. We're talking about when there's a tremendous outpouring of anger from Hashem for whatever reason. Here we're talking about Makas Bechoris. Before we were also talking about the Churban Bayis tradition and other examples like that. We're not talking about the regular run of the mill things. You know, obviously we're not talking about all the tzaddikim either. Hashem always has that. There will always be tzaddikim who survive the whole thing and go on to lead the Jewish people after it's all over. So yeah, and we're not saying all the tzaddikim, but there are certain tzaddikim where Hashem will take them out of the world so that they don't have to see the full extent of the Puranas. And to that extent, Abaye is saying it's a good thing for them. It's a favor that Hashem does for them, kind of. Onward. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, La'olam Yikonis Adam B'Kitov V'Yetzer B'Kitov. In this connection, a person should always come in when it's Kitov, when the sun is still shining. He should already come in and go to his hotel rather than waiting till it gets dark. V'Yetzer B'Kitov, and he should leave the next morning also only when it's Kitov, only when it's light outside. Shenema, the same pasuk, V'Atam Lo'Yetzer, we should pass our base at Berker. Nobody should leave their house in Mitzrayim on the night of Makas Pachoros until morning. And as Maharsha says, the point is, in other words, if it was just a matter of staying inside while Makas Pachoros is raging, then on the face of it, they could go out after midnight. Makas Pachoros is over. But the answer is that Bechlal, you have nighttime is Bechlal, a time of Sakana. So here's where Tosfos goes in to a little arichos in it. There's a brief summary of it in a parenthetical note printed in the middle of Rashi over here. Rabbi Natan learns that we're talking about over here this Yekonis B'Kitov. The Yetzer B'Kitov is Dafka talking about when a person is traveling from one city to another. Rabbi Natan learns if it's all within the same town, then there's no particular kedah that a person has to Dafka leave when it's light and come in when it's light. Then the Gemara goes, then Tosfos goes on to say that the Ri disagrees and says it would apply within the town itself. So different possibilities. Yavin the skin in that connection, the famous story in the Medrash, where Reb Meir was one time staying in an inn, and this innkeeper was secretly in cahoots with a bunch of robbers. So what they would do is when guests would stay over in the inn, the innkeeper would wake them up like very in the middle of the night and suggest to them, you know, it would be good to get a head start on the next leg of your journey, and I'll accompany you a little ways. Then meanwhile, they'd come to the place where his confederates are hiding out over there. They would go and then they'd go and jump them and rob them of everything they have, including for appearance's sake the innkeeper. Afterwards, the innkeeper would get together with them secretly and divide up the loot. So now, one time, Reb Meir comes to this and stays in this inn, and he realizes what this guy is up to. So when the guy comes and wakes him up in the middle of the night, Reb Meir says, I can't go yet. I'm waiting for my brother. All right, where's your brother? In shul. What's his name? Kitov. So the innkeeper goes to the shul and starts yelling out, Kitov, Kitov, your brother Meir is waiting for you. And nothing, no answer. So finally, this goes on for a while. Eventually, it becomes too light, and already the whole plot is not going to work. The whole point is, it only works by night when it's dark. So he comes back to the mayor, and he says, you know, I couldn't find this Kitov you're talking about. And the mayor says, he's already here. By Yarav Kim, it's the Kitov. Okay. Anyway. So the same thing over here. Then, so the Gemara is saying that Bechlal, aside from the point about specifically on that night in Makas Pachodes, when the Mazikin are out and about, in general, Mazikin are out during the night, and therefore a person should minimize the amount of time that he's outside. Again, according to Rabbi Natan, specifically we're talking about with intra-city travel. Okay. Talking further about this point, about these kinds of things, when a person should stay put versus when he should leave, Tana Rabbanan, Dever Be'ir, if there's an epidemic in the city, Kanes Raglecha, keep your feet inside. In other words, don't go roaming around in the streets. All of us remember a few years ago with COVID. So yeah. So that's one thing where we see that there was an epidemic going on. Now, Maharsha says it doesn't mean, for example, that you shouldn't go and leave the town. If you can leave the area that's affected and go someplace else, Adrava, by all means, do that. What it means is if you're going to be staying and living in town, then don't go roaming around in the streets. Then at least stay inside your house where you're less likely to be infected. Historically, by the way, we have a number of examples of that, of Gedolei Yisrael, who left town when there was an epidemic and moved to other places temporarily. We have, as one example, you have the Beis Yosef and the Ramah, both from the same generation, respectively in Eretz Yisrael and in Poland. Both of them, at one point, there was an epidemic in their towns, and they had to move away temporarily. The Beis Yosef went to a town near Tzfas called Birya and wrote parts of the Shulchan Aruch over there. The Ramah went to a town near Krakow called Shidlov and wrote over there his sefer Mechir Yayin, a Pirush on Megillas Esther. So those are two examples of great Sfarim that were written or partially written at a time when they were out of town because of an epidemic. Anyway, so Maharsha says the same thing. It doesn't mean don't leave town. It means if you're not planning to leave town, then at least don't go roaming around in the streets. V'omer, and you have another posse expressing the same point. The Navi says, Leich Ami, go, my people, boy b'chaderecha, come into your chambers, into your rooms, usgo delos chabadecha, and close your doors behind you. So we see also the point that when there's danger outside, then come inside and stay there. And then you have yet another pasuk in Hazinu, Michutz Teshako Cherev, outside the sword is killing people, and by the sword, Rashi says, we don't mean the swords of enemies, we mean the sword of the Malach HaMavos. So we're talking about, again, during an epidemic. Umechadorim Ema, and inside, in the wounds, there is terror. So there's still the terror of dying, but it's not so begolui. So the Gemara says, Maiva Oimer, why we need three psukim to explain the same point. So the reason is, Vachitema, because if we only had the first pasuk, then we would say, Hani Mila Deliria. You know what? Sure, at night, the pasuk by Makas Vachoris is talking about at night. So then you have to stay put inside. Avil be Mamaloi. But how do we know that the same thing applies by day when there's a plague going on? Tashma, therefore we have the second pasuk, Leich Ami Boi Bachadarecha, Usgor de Losecha. I know it's not talking about specifically by night. So therefore it would mean by day as well. That's going to be the third pasuk. We're going to get to the third pasuk in a second. Maharsha says this is also a proof for what he was saying before, that on the night of Makas Pachoris there were two different dangers. One, because in general you have Mazikim by night, and number two, because that's by that particular night, because Makas Pachoris was going off. And so when you have by day, when there's Devar Ba'ir, when there's a plague in the city, but it's by day, you only have one danger, so you would think it's not as bad, therefore you have the Pasuk from Yeshaya that tells us nevertheless go inside and stay indoors. Now, Chitema, but then you would think, Hani Mila Hecha Deleka Ema Megavoi, you would think, fine, that applies when it's safe indoors. There's nothing to be afraid of indoors. Then by all means, go indoors. Aval hecha deika ema migavoi. But if you're anyway going to be just as afraid inside, if it's not safe indoors as well, then you would think maybe ki nafik yosef ben inshi betzavsa de alma. So you would think at least if he goes out and stays with other people and they're keeping each other company, they're not all lonely. Tfei mali, maybe that would be better under those conditions. Toshma mechutz teshako cherev. That is why we have the pasuk from Hazinu that from on the outside the sword of the Malach HaMavos is killing, and in the inside of the rooms there is fear, meaning afogavdim chadorim ema. Even though there is fear inside, it's true you're not necessarily 100% safe in that situation indoors either. Nevertheless, michutz teshako cherev. Nevertheless, it's worse outside where the Malach HaMavos is raging around with a sword, and therefore you're still better off inside. It's still the lesser of the two evils.
This could be the marker
with that cover. I guess that was probably a marker for it. Yeah, So Maharsha also points out, now, you know, how do we know that the cherev of that pasuk is referring to the sword of the Malach HaMavos anyway? Maybe it means when marauding armies are around and about. Rashi explains as much on the pasuk. The answer is because since the pasuk before that mentions v'chumei reshef v'ketev miridi, meaning that people are being attacked by various kinds of shadim, so we have a right to also understand that the cherev over here is also a supernatural thing, meaning the Malach HaMavos rather than the swords of enemies. In this connection, the Gemara says, Rava, b'idan rischa, have a socher kavi. With Rava, when there was a time of anger of Hashem, meaning Rashi says, when there was an epidemic, he would close his windows. Dichtiv, ki olam mavas b'chalenenu, as we have a pasuk in Yirmiyah, we read it in the Torah of Tisha B'Av, that says, death has come up in our windows, so to speak, it comes in through the windows. Pashas, I guess you would understand easily enough, the germs come in through the windows, and therefore he would make sure to close them. Rabbi Akiva Eger also closed the windows during an epidemic. I haven't heard of that, but okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So based. Yeah, obviously based on this Gemara, yeah. Okay. By the way, there is also, as far as this point before about Devar Ba'ir Kanes Laglecha, where Maharsha had said, by all means, if you can leave the city, you should do that. Just if you're going to stay in the city, you should stay indoors. There are other Rishonim who learn. It's brought actually in Shulchan Aruch. Another answer is, Ion Yaakov brings it over here briefly. There's a difference between the beginning of the epidemic versus later on. At the beginning, if you can leave, by all means do that. Go move someplace else, which is not being affected. But once things have been going on a while, don't leave for another city, then you're just going to bring the epidemic along with you. So that there's that factor to consider as well, yeah. Onward, the Gemara says, Tonen Abonim, we learn in a Braisa, Ro'ov Ba'ir. Now, so far we were talking about if there's Devar Ba'ir, if there's an epidemic in town, so we said, Kanis Raglecha, then try to stay indoors as much as possible. Now, on the other end, Ro'ov Ba'ir, if there's a famine in the city, hazard, aglacha, then just the opposite. Scatter your feet, meaning go find someplace else to live. Shenemar, as opposed to this, Vayirav Baretz, there was a famine in the land, Vayirad Avram Mitzrayim ala Gorsham, and Avram went down to Mitzrayim from Eretz Yisrael to live there. So he didn't try to stay in Eretz Yisrael and wait it out and hope that hope for a nest, because B'derech HaTeva, it's not gonna work, and therefore he had to leave from Mitzrayim. V'Oimer, and we have another pasuk in that connection with the Abba Mitzrayim. Yeah, the story in Sefer Melachim, we read it as Haftarah, Parshas Mitzrayim, where there were four Mitzrayim stuck outside the gates of Shomron, and there's a famine inside the city, and there's the army of Aram is camped outside the city besieging it, and the pasuk says that the four Mitzrayim said to themselves, Ima Maunu Novahir, if we were to think, what should we do over here? If we were to say to ourselves, let's go into the city, the problem is, V'Arab Ba'ir, there's a famine in the city, Vamasnu Shaman, then we're going to die there. So therefore, they decide to go to the camp of Aram, and then they find that the whole thing is abandoned because Hashem made the Aramim hear a tremendous noise that they thought an army is coming to fight them, etc., etc., and you have the whole story of the nest as it tells over there. Anyway, so you see also that where there's a famine, then you don't stay put, then you leave. So the question is, Mai Va'omer, why do we need two different psukim to teach us the same point? And the reason is, because you only had the pasuk from Avraham, you would say, sure, you should go someplace else. Where there's not a suffix nefashis, there's not a suffix of danger going to another place. Who says that you should do pazer aglecha and move someplace else if there's going to be a suffix of death someplace else as well? These mitzrayim, after all, they're saying, the whole pasuk says, if we come into the city, then we're going to be in danger because of the famine. And if we go to the camp of Aram, then they might kill us. So either way, they're going to be in danger. So maybe it's not such a good idea. Toshma, therefore, note, the pasuk says that the Mitzrayim said, L'chuv nipla machne Aram, come, let's go and surrender ourselves to the camp of Aram, imichayunu nichia, and if they keep us alive, then good, and if not, then basically we haven't lost anything. So you see that even when there's a danger in either place, that it's still better to stay away from the place with the famine, because we see they didn't try going into the city, they went out to the camp of Aram, figuring they'll take their chances. So now Marshall points out that with these four Mitzrayim, now you have to ask, so what's the point? If they went into the city, if they're for sure going to die, of course, Sofik Motzi Midevade, if it's only doubtful what the Aram are going to do to them, and it's a certainty that they're going to die of hunger in the city, of course they should go to the camp of Aram. What do we need a pasuk to tell us that point? So, in fact, if anything, there's a case with Avram is more of a chiddush. So Marsha explains, because when we say if we come into the city, we're going to die there of famine, they don't mean for sure we're going to. They mean it's highly likely. It's a rov shokloya. It's a famine over there where there really is next to nothing to eat. As you have the psukim before that in Malachim described how people were even paying high prices for garbage. So there was almost no food in the city. So therefore, it's not fine. It's not 100% for sure that they're going to die, but it's a very, very high likelihood. And with Avram Avinu as well. The fact is, if it was only a minor famine, Avram wouldn't even be allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. The fact that he leaves from Mitzrayim shows that it was a major famine anyway. So that's what we're saying. So in Avram Avinu's case, he leaves from Mitzrayim, and at the beginning at least, until he came close to Mitzrayim, he has no reason to think he's in any particular danger. Even after that, it's only because of Sarah's beauty. But as opposed to over here with the four Mitzrayim, where there's a very high likelihood that they'll die in the city of hunger, but there's a lesser likelihood, but still a major likelihood, that they're going to be killed by the Aramim. Still better to go there. Still better to go to the second alternative. The Gemara continues. Tanan Abanan, Dever Be'ir, when there is an epidemic in the city, Al Yahalach Odom Be'emtza Derech. A person should not walk in the middle of the road. Because the Malach HaMavas walks down the middle of the road. Why? In those times, generally speaking, the main traffic would usually go down the middle of the road. When you had individuals who had to stay apart from the general public, would move to the sides. For example, there's a Mishnah in Shkalim that mentions that during most of the year, if you find saliva in the middle of the street, it could well be from a Tomei person, because during most of the year, the Tmeim don't have to separate themselves from the Tahurim. So if anything, the Tahurim... the people who want to keep themselves tahor because they're eating truma or kodshim or whatever would keep to the sides. So therefore, so you see that in general, the main flow of traffic would be in the middle of the street. So here you have the Malach HaMavis walks in the middle of the street. The Kivin be Yehivalei Rishusa, since he has Rishus now, because an epidemic is going on, Maskila Hedya. He walks down the middle of the street like he owns the place, kind of. So therefore, so to walk in the middle of the street, then you might end up meeting up with him. On the other hand, Shalom Be'ir, but if there's peace in the city, if there's no epidemic, Al Yahalachodim Mitzidei Drachim, then a person should not walk by the sides of the roads. To give into less later shusa, because since at those times the Malach HaMavis does not have general permission to harm people, mach v'chavuyah misagi, so he kind of skulks along on the sides and when walks along. So if we walk on the sides, you're more likely to bump into him. A couple of Mephoshim explain that this is also meant metaphorically. Usually you have the Rambam famously writes in Hilchos Deos that a person usually has to act in matters of health, b'derech hamitzua. So, for example, a person shouldn't overeat, he shouldn't starve himself, he should do the middle kind of thing as far as eating and drinking and as far as all kinds of other things of regular conduct. So therefore we're saying, but in a time of Dever, you can't do that. You can't stay in the middle road, because when it's a time when the air is full of germs and things are not normal, then you have to go to one direction or the other, depending on what medical advice at the time tells you, in terms of you may have to eat more of something or less of something else, or you may have to change other practices of yours in order to avoid getting hit. In a similar vein, it also means as far as mitzvahs and mice and tovim as well. The Rambam also says as far as deis, as far as a person's midas, should also be usually in the middle. A person shouldn't be so quick to anger, but he should also not be like an unfeeling stone. Never get angry, and the same thing with all the other midas. So again, here when it comes to, and the same thing with tzedakah, for example, a person has to give a normal amount, not too much, not too little. But again, in a time of dever, at the time of danger, a person has to go to one extreme or the other. For example, be giving more tzedakah or be more nizer and mitzvahs than usual. In order to have schosim to save himself. So that's also all included in this idea of not walking in the middle of the road, but rather going to the sides. Okay. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Dever Be'ir, if there's an epidemic in the city, Al Yikonis Adam Yechidi Lebeis HaKnesses, a person should not go alone into shul. Shem Malach HaMavis Maskid Shem Kelev, because the Malach HaMavis deposits his tools over there. Like a shul, in other words, the idea is metaphorically, like you have, it's a place where people gather, and therefore it's a place where diseases are more likely to spread. Maybe this also has to do with, when we couldn't have minyanim during COVID, maybe this is related to that, yeah. However, v'hani mili heich b'le koro b'daudaki v'le matzlu b'yasara. However, that only applies if this shul is not a place where there's a cheder, where little kids learn Torah, or you don't have a minion davening over there. So then you have, it's like an abandoned or half-abandoned shul. That's the kind of place that the Malach HaMavis makes his headquarters. But if you have, if there's a minion that regularly davens over there, or if you have children regularly learn Torah over there, that schus protects that even the Malach HaMavis can't establish himself over there. More on this topic of Dever, the Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Klovim Boichim, when the dogs are crying, when they're whining and making crying sounds, means Malach HaMavis Be'ir, means Malach HaMavis is in the city, or has come to the city. Bechlal, we find in various places that animals have a certain sensitivity to ruchniyasticha things that human beings don't. Rashi mentions it, for example, in connection with Bilam and his donkey. The donkey sees the Malach three times, Bilam doesn't, until Hashem opened up his eyes. Rashi explains, because if a person would see all of if Bilam, for example, had seen that Malach, or if any of us saw the Malachim and Shadim that are all over the place, we'd be terrified out of our wits. Whereas a behemoth doesn't have that kind of a behemoth doesn't have that kind of das. So in the same vein over here, the dogs have a certain sixth sense, or whatever you want to call it, to detect that the Malach HaMavis is there, and they express it with their crying and whining. Yeah, sometimes also animals can detect earthquakes before people can, yeah. On the other hand, klovim misachim, but if the dogs are laughing and are happy, it means Eliyahu HaNavi bothered you, then it means Eliyahu HaNavi has come to town. However, the Gemara says, v'hani mili jeles b'hu nekeva. However, that only applies if there's no female dog among them, because if it is, then they're laughing or crying because they're trying to get her attention or trying to stay away from her, and then it has nothing to do with the Malach HaMavis versus Eliyahu HaNavi. So there's actually a long explanation in one of the Mefarshim along the lines of when Eliyahu HaNavi comes or the Malach HaMavis comes, then there's other Malachim that come along with them, and you have the Malach that the dogs have an affinity for, and therefore they're happy when he comes, versus when the Malach HaMavis comes, there's a different kind of Malach that they don't like, and therefore they're crying. So the point is, in other words, that you can tell from how they're behaving what's going on in town. One point is also Mefarshim say this is why when the Torah tells us by Makas Bechoris, L'chol B'nei Yisrael, L'yechatz Kelev L'shoina, you have the Malach HaMavis is raging around the Tzayim over there. Based on what we're saying over here in the Gemara, you would expect that the dogs are going to be whining, and the Eidosh says, no, on that night, L'yechatz Kelev L'shoina, none of them are going to make a sound against any Jew. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chavches Tishrei. We have, there are nisim that are enclosed in teva versus there are nisim that are higher than teva. Nisim enclosed in teva, classic example, of course, is Purim. So the mitzvah Rebbe explains in Shara Emuna that when a nes is enclosed in teva, then it comes begulli. How so? Because when you have a nes that's not enclosed in teva, we know the mitzius of the nes, but we don't know what the mahus, we don't know what the nes actually is. Take, for example, Tchias HaMesim. We can see there was somebody who was dead and now is alive, but how did they become alive? We have no idea. And the same thing with all nisim and lamai v'niteva. So we call those kinds of nisim niflois, because a pella is something that you can't even comprehend with your seichel. So back when the Rebbe said this, it was in Tavshin Nun Aleph, when it was the years of Teishnas niflois, whatever, and now we're in Tavshin Pei, whatever, so Teishnas plois, whatever. So similar idea. Maybe it should help that we should takasi plois lamai v'niteva. Okay, continuing with halachas from the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. So we were talking about that a person is supposed to be getting up by chatzos to say tikkun chatzos. So the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, what if a person can't wake up by chatzos, then he should wake up by the beginning of the Ashmura Hashlishis, the beginning of the third watch. The Gemara explains in Brachas that there are three watch, the nighttime, the 12 hours of the night, are divided into three watches, each one consisting of 4 hours. Shoris Zmanias, that is. So therefore, if a person can't get up by Chatzos, then at least he should get up 2 hours to 2 Shoris Zmanias before Chatzos and do Tikkun Chatzos there. To do Tikkun Chatzos then. The Alter Rebbe mentions in Tanya as well, in Igeres HaTshuva, that if a person, the time for Tikkun Chatzos would really be any time from then on. Chatzos is the best for it, but that time, Ashmura Horoshona, the beginning of Ashmura HaMsois, is also acceptable for that purpose.